Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Levler.
Welcome to another edition of Suffolk Matters on Walk 97.5 and 94.3 The Shark, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News and views you can't hear anywhere else.
So my guest this morning is Assemblyman Steve Englebright. Good morning.
Good morning, Dan.
Just a little background, I guess, for our listeners. You know, we referenced that you're an assemblyman, but there's a lot more to that story. But, you know, just initially, you know, how long have you been serving in the assembly?
Just under 30 years.
That is quite a bit of amount of time to have gained a lot of experience. And you know, in your 30 years, you've seen a lot. But, you know, have you ever seen a year like 2020 so far?
No.
Yeah.
No, this is an adverse standout. I wish it weren't so prominent, so for all the wrong reasons.
Absolutely, yeah. And this, you know, I mean, this always, you know, the COVID crisis touches up against so many things that it's always, you know, it's just looming in the background almost on any conversation, you know. And you know, you have a long history in your commitment to the environment, and I'm sure you're seeing ways that COVID and the fiscal crisis is also, you know, able to impact the environment. But one of the things that you worked on so hard was preserving the Long Island Pine Barrens. And I just want to talk a little bit about, you know, why that was such a priority.
Well, it's a priority because we are an island. It's a big island. It's easy to forget that we're not hydrologically connected to the mainland, but right. We're not. We have, as a result of that, a total dependency upon water taken out of the permeable sands and gravels of our island. It's a sole source of drinking water, and drinking water is the number one limiting factor for our quality of life and, indeed, our individual health. So drinking water in the last pure source area, the forested interior that was never violated with contamination, becomes a really big priority. It's our ace in the water hole, so to speak. It's our insurance policy that we'll always have pure water as a source that is financially achievable. Desalinating water is, I mean, there are other ways to get water, but appropriate way to do it, I believe, is to just not develop the groundwater recharge areas that remain pure and use those as a water supply source for present and future generations.
Sure. So, you know, we have this sole source aquifer here on Long Island. We're constantly drawing out of that aquifer for all of our water needs. And, you know, some of that water comes back through rainwater. Some of that gets processed through, you know, sewage treatment, you know, cesspool or whatever else, and you know, trickles its way back down into the system. But, you know, you do run the risk of you know, if you don't have these preserved areas, like you say, uncontaminated areas, recharging the aquifers, you do run the risk. It's a sole source. If something gets in there that shouldn't be in there, it's going to be a big problem for the region.
It's a big problem. You know, if you want to compare upstate reservoirs to our in-the-ground reservoir, our groundwater reservoir, if a accident occurs, a truck drives off the road and it spills toxic materials into an upstate reservoir, that would be a terrible thing. But it will cleanse itself by the replacement of water. Those reservoirs are fed by streams in a matter of a couple of years. If something like that happens, though, in a groundwater reservoir, the residence time of the contaminant is measured in thousands of years.
Right.
So we have a much more fragile, pure water source, and we need to protect it with that perspective in mind.
Yeah, you know, and again, you know, when I say harmful to the region, I mean, you would almost not have a region if you didn't have a clean water source, a source that was viable for, you know, for human consumption and for all the work that we use water for. You know, it's the death of the region.
It could be. So that's why when I entered into public service as an elected official now almost 40 years ago, because I served just under 10 years in the county legislature before going to the state level.
Right.
You know, I addressed this issue. I campaigned on it in my first campaign, and I addressed this issue and worked with my colleagues, and together we put this before the voters, argued the case, went through a process of public education, and the voters are pretty smart, and they said, yes, protect our water.
Yeah, and, you know, that's an initiative that's still ongoing, you know, through processes like the, you know, the Pine Barrens and the county executive, also very big on water quality in Suffolk County. And before we get into any of those initiatives, I'm wondering, do you have any new pieces of legislation that you've authored that you're looking to see, you know, or hoping to see move forward?
Two things immediately come to mind. Most recently, I had the privilege of working with our county officials and most particularly the district attorney, Tim Sini, to pass legislation to increase fines and thereby make it much less attractive to dump construction and demolition debris and contaminated truckloads of waste on Long Island. Some of that's been coming out from the urban core, New York City, and even beyond, because we've been an easy target. And District Attorney Sini, had worked very hard on trying to get ahead of this issue. And I had the privilege of working with him and sponsoring a bill consistent with what his grand jury had recommended on this topic. That's one thing. And I'd like to monitor, as he will be doing, monitor the progress of the enforcement of that. And we may need to tweak the enabling language that we did at the state level. But I think that's a really important initiative. And it, again, it ties back to public health. And the other issue is the biggest one I've ever worked on, which is climate change. We have really led the nation at the state level with the CLCPA, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which sets realistic but necessary goals for reducing our greenhouse gas emissions statewide.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, so climate change has been discussed a lot. And, you know, the proponents of legislation that bring our greenhouse gas emissions down and try and set up safe and achievable goals for, you know, for the future and how we're going to wean ourselves off of some of the things that have damaged our environment. But on either side, there's people that are, you know, they say, well, you know, this is actually fake or this is true. But we're seeing a lot of things happening in the country now. I mean, the wildfires,
yes,
is one of the things that comes to mind.
Yes.
What would you say, you know, again, as a natural scientist and someone who has worked on policy for, I guess, almost 40 years, right?
Yes.
You know, what would you say, you know, with all of your experience to those people who think that maybe climate change is false?
Well, they need to take another look at the issue. They don't have to go far to see the issue. This week, as you rightly point out, the effects of over 100 major fires in our western coast states has drifted smoke across the entire continent. And just look up at the sky as the sun goes down, and you'll see the effect of that particulate matter in the atmosphere. It's colored our otherwise normally orange or yellow sun red.
Yeah.
That's because of the particulate matter that's coming to us from California and Washington and Oregon that we've never seen before. So what's different? And what's different is that the climate is really getting out of its previous pattern. This past week, we saw a portion of the ice shelf of Greenland, an area twice the size of Manhattan Island, break free. It was the plug for one of the glaciers. Glacial ice flows very slowly, but very similarly to water. So if you remove the plug, the ice within the glacier is freer to move toward the sea. If this process is really examined objectively, it's very clear that this is a relatively new, in terms of time, phenomenon. And just think about what will happen. I mean, if the ice, all of the ice in Greenland melts and goes into the global ocean, sea level will rise 24 feet. It will drown out Wall Street, the South Shore of Long Island.
Yep.
The Barrier Island will be underwater. Fire Island will disappear. Our harbors, Port Jefferson Harbor and so forth, will be severely flooded. So this is a non-trivial consideration. And what's causing it is a general consensus on that from the scientific community, that it is generated by greenhouse gases, gases that, when they enter into the atmosphere, retain heat, let the light come in from the sun, but don't let the heat that it generates
escape.
Bounce back.
Yeah, right.
And it heats up just like a greenhouse does, the whole Earth. We don't want to pass on an impossible hothouse to our next generation. So we need to act now. And so that's why at the state level, we have taken a position of really getting serious about this. I salute my colleagues, most particularly Todd Kominski in the Senate, who has championed this in that House. I'm the prime sponsor in the Assembly, but I've had dramatic support on this issue from many of my colleagues. And both sides of the aisle, this is not a partisan issue. This is an issue, though, that will determine the fate and future of our state and our nation.
Sure. And, you know, there is that, I guess, they, you know, a tipping point, a point where which if we do not act, if we do not, you know, reverse the course that we're on or mitigate where, you know, efforts after that tipping point will have little to no effect. So, you know, these decisions need to be made and enacted now.
So that's why we set up the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, set goals and have a well-developed mechanism for decision-making that includes a climate advisory panel. We've got some really wonderful people who've been appointed. The assembly appointments were world-class scientists, climate scientists.
Right.
And we want to hear their opinion in an ongoing way. So the bill allows for their input in a continuing fashion.
Okay. So our guest, if you're just tuning in, our guest this morning is Assemblyman Steve Englebright. And Assemblyman, you know, just getting back into water quality again, you know, the environmental impact of that, you know, we talked about why that is so important as a region with a sole source aquifer. And where do you stand on initiatives to expand sewers in Suffolk County?
Complicated topic. Sewers fall into the realm of correction and protection. Protection has two broad categories. One is prevention, and the other is correction. And sewers are not new. They were invented to protect populations in ancient Rome and Greece from waterborne infectious disease. We're now asking our sewers to do more than that. We want them to protect the environment, to protect the quality of our offshore waters and our bays and our harbors, as well as our own drinking capability. And so the topic is complicated. I support sewers to correct. I do not support sewers that would advance increased new population density, new development.
Right.
The consequences of misusing the sewer tool is to really have an adverse impact upon our quality of life. We don't want to turn to sewers in order to make Suffolk County look like Lower Manhattan.
Correct. Yeah, and you know, so much of Suffolk County has septic systems, and those systems don't process the same way that sewage treatment does. So without increasing the density and the build out, so to speak, and putting more houses, higher houses, multifamily dwellings and apartment buildings, whatever else we might throw into that mix, setting up sewers to do a better job than septic does without increasing the density
That's
of
right.
the population is the way to go.
It is the way to go.
Yeah.
And the county executive has campaigned on that, and the people, again, are pretty smart. And they reelected Steve Ballone on his promise to be very attentive to water chemistry, water quality issues as they affect human health and the general environment. I think the county's general policy in this direction is in the right direction.
Yeah, I guess just restating what you had said before, in an effort to correct, some of the usage and make sure that when we're, recharging this water back into the ground, that it is, it has the lowest nitrate levels possible. That's the proper use.
Nitrogen, of course, comes from waste, human waste, and nitrogen, is not just the element nitrogen. It's nitrogen oxide, NO3, as a chemical radical that is so very useful, particularly to living organisms, for their own reproduction and biochemical processes. And so it's basically like fertilizer. If you put too much nitrate into the environment, you stimulate too much growth, and that's what can happen in our harbors, for example.
Sure.
You put too much nitrate from too many cesspools into the groundwater that then bleeds into our harbors naturally, but with an unnatural amount of nitrate, what happens is you cause a terrible disruption in the marine ecosystem. You get algae that blooms, that is overgrowing and being over abundant, which in turn changes the amount of oxygen in the water, which in turn, through the reduction of oxygen, can cause massive fish die-off to occur, and the entire ecosystem starts to unravel because of the unnatural amount of nitrate. So moderation is something that nature has taught us, and we should attempt to be a part of nature rather than to use engineering devices such as sewers, which are necessary and useful,
right,
but don't overuse them and try to overcome nature. And just remember that nature really has the last word every time.
Yeah, it sure will, And again, that ties us back into, the climate change stuff and everything else. And, very early on, we talked about how COVID touches up against so many things, right? And,
yeah.
And specifically, the revenue impact that's had, and a lot of the things that we've been talking about today, they have a revenue component. And in Suffolk County, some efforts were made to mitigate some of the revenue shortfalls that COVID created, and the predominant piece of that being sales tax. The everyday citizen was able to get the stuff they had to get by. They were able to get groceries and again, with varying degree of, the supply and demand was a little wonky, especially in the beginning. But the want to stuff, I want to go to a restaurant, I want to go, out to the mm-hmm. bar, or like that stuff, it had to be halted, and it was right and it was necessary. And, I constantly say, with COVID, we have to prioritize human life. but it did have a financial impact.
It's still having that impact.
Sure.
It's having a devastating impact. Let me just take a moment here. We're talking basically about what is going to be an ongoing disruption for at least another year or so.
Sure.
And I think we all need to recognize that when you say it's having a financial impact, what it's capable of doing by slowing down our ability to interact with one another, we can't gather in the density that we became accustomed to for restaurants and athletic events and the like. And living in denial is only going to cause us to have fewer of us living. So we've really got to listen to the science and do social distancing, wear masks, hope that we can have a vaccine as soon as possible, and keep our eye on what we really are trying to do when we have children. We're getting ready to pass our civilization and our society on to the next generation. And they are not going to be benefited by our misuse of this moment. We need, in my opinion, to keep an eye on the way that we fund our governments. The governments are there, particularly I'm thinking in this case of county government,
sure,
with enormously important services, our police services, our county health department, social services, our courts. All of those are what creates a civilization. The county is that level of government that holds us together between the state and the federal and the town levels of government. The county is the one least understood by most of our citizens and too often taken for granted. And I just want to take this moment to say, please take another look at what county government does for our quality of life and for our children and our loved ones. Don't allow this moment of financial difficulty to erode our ability to keep our county services intact. And that requires doing some very difficult things. It may require raising some revenue from sources that we haven't turned to in the past. I don't think we can, you know, let the police department, for example, unravel. There's a whiff of insanity in the air about defunding police. No, you don't defund the police. They protect us.
Right.
They, as all of our county employees are heroes. They put themselves on the line. All of our county employees,
sure,
put themselves on the line every day and make it possible for us to have the confidence that our families are safe.
And there is a big support system behind the police department. You know, you say police department, you think, you know, you picture the cop in the car, you know, out on the road. But so much goes on behind the scenes, and that's, you know, yeah, there's a civilian workforce that's behind that entire process also.
That's exactly right.
And cutting there cuts the effectiveness of what the officers can do out in the streets. And, you know, Suffolk County has the crime rate it has because of the, you know, the training and the ability of those officers and the support staff, you know. And
that's the quality of life.
Yes. There you are. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, again, Suffolk County is facing, like so many counties, like New York State is going to be facing, you know, these fiscal uncertainties. And so, you know, when you develop a budget, as is done in Suffolk County, you know, you project out what you think you're going to have and what you think you're going to be able to spend. And at a time like this, things look very, very grim. They do.
They look grim at all levels. I had the privilege of speaking with Governor Cuomo just a couple of days ago, and he's monitoring the revenues at the state level just as effectively as our local county executives and county officials are doing in both Nassau and Suffolk. And as you say, I mean, it's a perilous time. If the budgets matter, because the budgets are used to provide the persons who serve us, protect us, protect our loved ones. And without them, we might as well be living in a cave.
Right.
We have a civilization. We call it a quality of life. We call it a state, a nation, and a county. And those levels of government are purposeful, and we created them to serve our needs. Those needs are still there, and we've got to find a way to make sure that we don't do something short-sighted this time of crisis by allowing massive layoffs or people to be fired. That's something that we have to avoid. I think the governor is very focused on that. I'm sure from my conversations with my own county legislator, Kara Hahn, and others, her very high-quality public servants at the county level, that everyone is trying to avoid that.
Yeah, it is important. And, you reference not seeing a reduction in the services that people need. And it's, obviously something very important to me in my role, and something that I understand, when you say that, folks can misunderstand the role of county government. I have a day-to-day saturation of what county government is and why it's so important to the region. But we're seeing an uptick in the need for services. So, reducing the people who can provide those services at a time that the need is expanding, and it's difficult, And again, as we discuss this concept, we also know, the revenue is the revenue. It's finite. There should be a look at whether or not more stable forms of revenue would be appropriate at a time like this. Reliance on sales tax is a volatile number. And when things like this happen, areas that are reliant on sales tax, like Suffolk County is, takes a bigger hit, whereas other areas that have more stable forms of funding. And I guess you're probably seeing and hearing about, other regions that are very much reliant on what they get on the state level, what kind of support they get on the state level, and the state is going to have a hard time providing that same level. So their revenue streams become volatile also. So it's a time for bravery in elected officials to really, I guess, sharpen their pencils, so to speak, and figure out how can we set up something that's stable moving forward.
I believe that we need to educate our public. Our public is very in tune. If you give them information, and they see their own best interests if you give them insight. So elected officials can't, just meet behind a closed door and decide to raise taxes or something. You need to have support for any initiative that is so vital to the needs of our population. And so we need to spend some time in public forums informing our public. They'll be there to support their own best interests if they are well informed. If they're not well informed, that's our fault as elected officials.
I couldn't agree more. It is a daunting task, but one that's necessary.
You mentioned the state and the county. I just want to reinforce that. The two units of government that are primarily dependent upon sales tax are state and county.
Sure.
There are other forms of primary revenue that support other levels of government, but the state and the county are very similar in that regard. And the counties are really an extension of the role that the state plays. The state Department of Environmental Conservation or the state health department enter into contracts with the local agencies within our counties to carry out state policy. So the state should not abandon the county.
I agree.
We've got to go through this from time to time and just remind people in state government that you can't start cutting back on funds for county-level services because you're cutting back on what is your mission at the state level, because the county is, for all practical purposes, a local echo or reflection of what the state policies are.
Yes, and I think that's very well said, and you know, the perfect point in our conversation to call it quits for the day. Our guest this morning was Assemblyman Steve Englebright. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dan.
And to our listeners, we'll speak to you next week.